You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello, this is Lydia from the future. A quick thank you to Ellen and Nikita for joining me on this adventure. It made it so much fun. I would have enjoyed the conference anyway, but traveling, especially having the ordeal to get home, and just existing would not then have nearly as much fun without them. So thank you so much. I also want to give a special thank you to the people who were willing to speak to me on the street. I really appreciate them because I was learning on the job how to do that as well, do little street interviews. That was something that I very much wanted to do during the conference, and their patience with me, especially as I hit technical difficulties and technical learning opportunities, is greatly appreciated and unmeasurable. Thank you also to the Serious Play folks for giving me the press pass that allowed me to be able to come. I enjoyed it a lot. And so thank you for the opportunity to get to see and meet all of these wonderful, brilliant people. From room B207 at St. John Fisher University in Floral, Rochester, New York, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and games development. I'm Lydia Simchish, and I make nice games.
And I'm Ellen Burns-Johnson, and I make nice games.
It's a special episode. We are on an adventure to attend the Serious Play Conference. And so if everyone is ready, let's start.
Adventure indeed, well chosen.
Yeah, it was an adventure to get here. It was really, it was so early. We had to wake up at 3:30 a.m. for a 6 a.m. flight out of MSB.
That was surprisingly, like, not as painful as I expected. I think I was just really amped to get going.
That's true.
But then I somehow reactivated that same alarm on my alarm clock last night. So I woke up at 3:30 this morning to music from Ocarina of Time.
Which at this point, because of time difference, was 2:30 in the morning Central Time. So you actually woke up earlier.
No.
In your body. Yeah.
No, I feel like I'm actually doing pretty well at this point in the day, given all that.
Yeah. Wearing a cute dress. Got your makeup on.
Got my makeup.
Honestly, that's more than I would expect from a bad night of sleep.
Got dressed around noon.
So you got dressed.
That's true. Yeah, it's been good.
Yeah, so we are at the Serious Play Conference. It is based here in St. John Fisher in Rochester, New York. It is currently at recording this moment, day two.
Day two.
It is the end of day two.
End of day two, yep.
I have been to both days. Ellen, this is the first time that you've picked up your badge.
Yeah, my goodness. I am... As often happens with conferences, you book a conference well in advance, right? Mm-hmm. Make the plans because you got to get your flight and you got to get your ticket and you got to make your plans with Lydia and you got to get your Airbnb. Mm-hmm. And then your project is nuts. But I knew this project would continue being nuts. The thing is, it was fine for me to come here and only go to a couple sessions as long as I got to hang out with Lydia and Nikita.
Yeah.
Which... I've been to one session and I've hung out with Nikita and Lydia and dog.
Oh, yes, there's dog.
There's a dog. Brought her dog and Nikita brought her husband. So it's been a really fun time to hang out. And we went to the museum. We've done tons of things already. So even if I don't go to a single other session, it will have been more than worth it. However, I have many fewer meetings tomorrow.
Yay.
It'll actually be a pretty solid day three for me.
And my thing is, so basically I went yesterday from the beginning, basically when it
registration opened up so I could go to the keynote. And I found just by going through the app, which has actually been quite helpful.
Yeah.
I had the most back-to-back talks on the first day. And so I was like, okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to be a conference goer for day one, get the vibe. Also, because that was the first good night of sleep I've had in a couple days and I didn't want to blow out my social battery and my executive functioning too early.
A theme.
Yeah. So what I did is I went and just got vibes.
Yeah.
And then today I... got to start talking. That was when I started scheduling meetings through the networking feature of the app for the conference. And hope that's also when these great little fuzzy microphones came. Yay. Thank you, Ellen, for buying them.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, at some point I'll have these and then I can figure them out and we can start doing recording for the podcast. I found that I have to stop going to some talks if I'm ever going to talk to people because they're really interesting people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just not enough time to be able to talk to people as much as I want to. And I need and want to do that. And that means I have to sacrifice going to some of the really cool sounding docs that I want to go to.
I know.
In general, just as a side note, segue. So one of the things about registration, you go and you pick up your badge as one does, but they also put a sticker on your badge. They have what they're calling the raid party game.
Mm-hmm.
So they put a sticker, which is one of five icons with a different color circle around it.
It's like your class.
Yeah. So it's a shield, a staff, a bow, a sword, and something. I think a potion bottle. And then you have the color around it. You're supposed to make a party of five of every of the different icons in the same color. So I have a black surrounded shield. That means I'm a tank. I would have to find five or four other people with the black circle, but with different icons.
Different classes.
We make a party and then we do tasks. And then if you do the tasks, you get raffle ticket entries up to five to then get prizes. And I believe the deadline for that was 4 p.m. today.
Yeah.
The first prize is everybody gets a gaming chair in the color of their choice. The Great. Second prize is non-transferable tickets, like prepaid admission to next year's conference,
yeah.
Which honestly sounds like should be the first prize for me, but that's just me. And then the third prize is t-shirts and something else that sounded cool. I can't remember what it was.
I don't know. Gaming chairs are expensive.
Yeah, but like I would rather have a conference ticket.
Yeah, but you already have. That's because you've cultivated your whole setup already.
I guess.
And tailored it the way that you want.
I guess. I mean, it still has work.
You could always get the gaming chairs and resell it.
No, I mean, I guess, but like.
That's also work.
Honestly, what I would do is I would get it in green or red and I would give it to my brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, as someone who made wedding guest bingo for my own wedding reception, because we have nerds who are awkward, who we're friends with. That this is a great way to encourage getting to know new people. However, through multiple overheard conversations, it sounds like the consensus at the Serious Play Conference among the attendees is that like this conference's attendees are way more open to starting a conversation with strangers than most. And I have also been the receiving end of that, and it's really nice. It's not like extrovert at a party, hi, I'm going to engage you in a conversation whether you want to or not, but it's very, very friendly and nice. And so I don't know, maybe this is not necessarily for this game is not necessarily solving a problem with the existing clientele, but it's kind of I can imagine how for someone who that isn't their default, or if they're new, this would be a really good icebreaker for them.
Is that something, this doesn't sound like something that was invented or designed for this conference. It sounds like a system that has potentially was invented by someone and cultivated and refined through multiple events, because I've seen other similar things.
Yeah. I think wedding guest bingo as a icebreaker also has not been invented by me.
Right. So I wonder. It's good feedback.
I think what I mean to say is that like it's really neat that it exists and it's a really good idea that they have it. I'm glad they have it, but it also just it's really nice also to know that that's not that was not necessary to get people to talk to each other, because people seem genuinely like friendly and opening and welcoming.
That's the really cool thing about smaller conferences like this. This is only a few hundred people. It's like 400 people, I think. That I saw somewhere, it's under 500 people.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone here is really into this.
Yeah.
Right? Like people have traveled from all over the world to come to this conference, not just from the Midwest.
Yeah,
we did. People are really into it and they want to make the most of their time here, but also, you know, connect with your tribe.
Yeah, it's really nice. There's a good mix of, there's educators, there are for multiple levels. There's devs of various sorts. It's really neat just how many different people are here to learn something, period.
Yeah.
Like whatever it is, they're here to learn something and they're here to talk to people. And it's really nice. It's very much the it's very liberal artsy in the way that I operate, which is, I think, cool in the sense of, you know, I as a designer love, part of what I love about my job being a positive impact designer is I get to talk to people about what they really find interesting.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And I think that's kind of just the vibe. Like that is the default state here. And that's really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is like default state beyond stops there more or less, because then it's like, oh, wow, all of these people who are very different here and fear for very different reasons all share that commonality, but then we get to learn about each other.
Mm-hmm. What are you working on? What are you?
Like, what are you like? From? What does it mean to you?
Yeah.
My name is Steven Schottenfeld. My pronouns are he, him. I'm local. I teach at the University of Rochester in the English department. So I'm about 10 minutes away from here. I'm writing a novel right now about an aspiring indie developer who's trying to make a very personal game set in Rochester. And I'm also showing the novel to a group of a team of recent graduates or still undergraduates at the University of Rochester who are making some kind of demo based on the game, based on the novel, excuse me.
From the conference that you've attended so far, what is something that you've learned either as research for the book or things to bring back to your game dev team?
I've talked to easily a dozen people here who either have made solo games or have tried to make them or have worked on indie or AAA games. And so I've been just learning about sometimes the mechanics of the games, the challenges of working alone or with a team, or even just how to market the game and build communities online.
Mm-hmm. Do you play games yourself? Like tabletop, board game, card game, video game?
I don't play enough games in terms of writing this book, but over the course of writing it, I've been playing more games, watching more gameplays, probably playing more video games than playing tabletop games.
Yeah. Do you have any that you love and would recommend to others to play?
Well, I think because my game is probably more narrative based, and because my background is a bit more of the, you know, a bit more of the writing side, I guess I've really enjoyed Night in the Woods. I just find the dialogue really compelling, and that it really works.
Yeah.
It feels authentic, specific to that, to the lives of those characters. So I've enjoyed that quirky world quite a bit.
So kind of in that same vein, during the keynote on day one
keynote.
Oh, it was good. One of the things that they mentioned in the pre-keynote speaker housekeeping stuff is that they really wanted to encourage you to, as he said, they showed a picture of a bee on a flower. You would love that, Ellen, is to cross-pollinate.
Right.
So the schedule is broken up on two axes by time and by sections. So it's one-on-one meetings. So for your own networking appointments that you make through the app, game development, K-12, higher education, corporate government and NGO, healthcare, culture and society, and then workshops. So the sessions themselves last between 30 minutes and 1.5 hours long, 1.5 hours long. And they have an official lunch break from 1 to 2 p.m., which was really scheduled. Very, very smart. Also, I love the fact that the workshops are separated out, because that was the thing that was like really cool talking to Nikita last night. Mm-hmm. Is she was like, I really want to do the hands-on stuff. And I was like, well, guess what? They have an entire level, like, throw
track. Yeah.
Just go do that track.
Yeah.
And you'll for sure have hands-on stuff, which doesn't mean that there aren't workshop-y things or hands-on stuff in the other talks. Like, I did a number that were hands-on today and yesterday. But that's really nice that if that's what you want, like that kind of learning and stuff is separated out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's, I mean, I've seen conferences, even small conferences, the workshops are like pre-workshop, like pre-conference workshops, and they're extra. And I think that could be kind of tough, right? Because you're not just adding on the cost of this pre-conference workshop. You're also adding on the additional lodging costs for that.
Or they are like, they are attempted to be integrated in with the rest of the schedule, which then causes timing and space problems.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the workshops here are 90 minutes, which is definitely longer than the other sessions, but it evens out every other session, right?
Yes.
So you can you can do a lot of cross-pollinating.
Yeah. But like that's, I really like, it was neat having it be so separate. It was interesting how it was separated, but also very clear that they wanted you to go to multiple different times. And like, didn't have to ask me twice. I've been to I think a session in every segment except for the workshops, actually.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. And Nikita's doing a workshop right now, or has just finished a workshop.
She just finished. I got a text from her.
Oh, nice. So now she has to find us.
I've only been to this conference once before, although I feel like I've been like making it a yearly goal. Go to the Serious Play Conference this year. Go to the Serious Play Conference this year. And I've only been here once before. I went to Toronto.
Ooh.
Yeah. Nice. And I got some interview. That was a couple years ago. And I went to Toronto and got some audio from folks there. This is bigger. This is a more robust conference, I think, than that one was. Mm. Like, the one that I went to in Toronto was great. It was really cool. I think it was an easier building to get around in. Mm-hmm. This one is, like, I needed a map, like an actual map. And the map, honestly, the map wasn't that much help.
Yeah.
But this is, like, it's a great campus. And just the level of depth and organization is has definitely leveled up.
The signage is better than some conferences I've been to.
Signage has been pretty
good. Gosh, it's helpful.
Yeah.
Because like if you're going to have things in multiple buildings, having any form of signage is like baseline amazing. Multiple forms of signage on foam core is really nice.
Yes. I guess I have high expectations because like you got to get people to where they need to be.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I feel like getting good signage is actually kind of like, okay, it's like table stakes.
Maybe it's just because I've been to places with terrible signage and difficulty to get around.
Yeah, that's terrible. It's bad.
Yeah. So this is already an improvement in my mind, but that's starting with a low bar.
Yeah. Yeah. Starting with a low bar, it's well exceeded the very low bar.
Yeah.
But I definitely, it's also my first like 2 hours
out for
literally right now. I've been here for like 2 hours. So I'm sure that, you know, everyone else seems like they know where they're going. So it might just be me.
Yeah. I mean, the space between the buildings feels like half the size, half the length today than it did yesterday. Yeah. Everything felt farther away from each other yesterday because I didn't know where I was going. You know, today I'm like, wow, that didn't take long to walk.
Is there a word for that? I feel like there should
be. The collapsing of space because of familiarity.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. No, put that into like a word. One word. German, Japanese.
Song. Oh, I mean, actually in the keynote speaker.
Yeah.
And on all of our chairs were cards from the game with the word. What's it?
Yeah.
The ones where it's just words that exist in other languages that don't in English.
Yeah, they had that deck of those.
Yeah.
They were like handing out cards.
Yeah, literally those were on every seat in the thing.
That's cool.
That was how we started that keynote address.
Well, now I want to go grab a card because at first I was like, I don't want to grab a card because I feel like it's too small. I'm going to lose it. But now I want to go back down and grab a card. But I want to pick which card that I want.
Oh, yeah. We were kind of allowed to pick.
Okay. So I think we should go do that. And then we can report on which cards we have later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you know how to fill the lexical gap, either in English or in a different language for the collapsing of distance because of familiarity with the distance and with the locations, please tell us. Otherwise, it's probably going to bug me for a while now.
Yeah. I really want to. I want to fix it.
Yeah.
Hi, my name's Joseph Amodi and I use they and them pronouns. I'm coming from the Lehigh Valley, which is
whereabouts?
Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, hour north of Philly, hour and a half inside of New York in this mountains of Pennsylvania. I am a game maker, creative technologist, theater designer, and public health researcher.
Lots of hats,
and
which is cool.
Work interdisciplinary, blending all those things together.
Can you tell me just something cool that you've learned this week at the conference? Because we're at day three now.
Yes, I have learned sort of some of the breadth of the different ways that people are using narrative and like role-playing based games to sort of communicate health topics, but also like thinking about it from an educational perspective.
Mm.
And so I've been like thinking about how people are doing this in kind of education specific spaces and how that ties to sort of healthcare spaces and like just the breadth of all these things that people are doing. I mean, I'm obviously a big game series play nerd. That's why we're here, but getting to see so many people doing like getting really specific about the ways that they're approaching these things is really fun.
Did you happen to go to the D&D, old school D&D and therapy session yesterday at the very end?
I wanted to, but I went to a different one instead.
Dang it. Yeah, there's too many.
Yeah, I know. It was at the same time as, I have to check my schedule.
Yeah, there were too many that overlapped, and it's because everything
but
sounds
it was
cool.
It was like a therapy, and the therapy and role-playing games one is the one I went to.
Yes, that was the one that I was also thinking about going to and ended up picking the opposite.
Both of them were on my list.
Yeah. What's a game that really you felt made a difference in your life and why?
Wow.
I know, it's deep. We can pick another
one. No, This is good. That's not too big. Early. KOTOR 1, Knights of the Old Republic.
Mm.
It's an old Star Wars game from 2002, 2003. So I was 12 or 13, but it was one of the first, the narrative of that game is really good, but also like the sort of like, took this thing that I liked even as a little young kid, like this sort of like Jedi thing and really like sort of complicated it. And you could be like, like this sort of like gray moral approach to this sort of storytelling world that sort of took this world that I knew from just a couple movies and really sort of opened it up in a way in the early like character creation and like customizability of this sort of non-binary icon Revan. So I feel like it also spoke to me as like a budding queer non-binary person in a way that I didn't fully really realize at the time. But
and that's interesting also because like Star Wars, you can look at it and go, oh, it's very good, evil, black, white. And but so having it be effectively like looking at the ambiguousness between sounds really cool and not something I would have expected from Star Wars.
Can I share one more?
Yes.
Classic, but Dungeons and Dragons. So, you know, I'm like a design and arts professor now, but I did no art making and quote unquote until my undergrad years because I like didn't know people could do that. I'm like a first year in college, so I like literally didn't know people who had jobs in those things or that you could do them.
Mm-hmm.
But I played D&D very intensely from like say 6 to 21.
Mm-hmm.
I still sometimes play, but it was such a big part of creativity and world building. And so when I think about that like approach to these things is how I now approach all of my art, design, theater, research, oral history, queer oral history work.
It is 3:20 on day three. It is Friday. I am exhausted. I managed to keep my energy up. And then today, the last day, I crashed. But we are persevering. There is still a lot of really interesting information. I have learned new things. It very much feels like I have dumped a whole bunch of different liquid into a large punch bowl. And now someone says like, what did you put in there? I'm looking at the punch bowl and it's a weird color. And I'm like, I don't know what I put in there. That's what I feel as far as all I've learned. I just know I've learned a lot, but I haven't parsed fully what those individual things are. I have well over 20 pages of notes in my planner, which is exciting. I cannot wait to look through those and share those. And I was talking to Vian Nguyen, who I worked with at Filament. And we found each other at lunch and we were kind of talking about how it was. And one of the things that we both, but I think they first used the word validating. And then I kind of realized, yeah, that's true, is how being in this space has been very validating in terms of, for them, it was a lot of the talks that they were attending. It was like, oh, I do this. And that is like, or I do this, or I believe this about games. And that is actually something that is legitimate and shared. And for me, it's been, I think, the
sense of, I don't know, it really is just so many, everything here has been so interesting. The people have been very friendly. We all seem to have this sense of there's a legitimacy, there's a feeling of legitimacy in qualitative transformation. You know, there's a need, obviously, and we recognize it, and we're working towards a need to quantifiably show that players have changed, that there is transformation, that someone has learned something, or that they have improved or been shaped in some way. But a lot of emphasis has been on the idea of this being used for things being used for review, games being used for practice, the importance and lack of spaces and opportunities for practicing concepts that are taught elsewhere, and how games are a legitimate form of that. And I think, like, that's been one of the things that I really believe in. I love games as a field trip. I love games as an opportunity to practice and review and solidify through repetition, which is very different than a games as an evaluation tool, or games showing, or that quantifiable showing of, like, you started here and then you played game and now you are here immediately, A to B. It's been so interesting to see the wide variety of people who have come here. There have been a couple people. One was a therapist who was using old school D&D in therapy. And there was another person who is a chemistry professor who's been making little escape rooms for reviews in place of review sessions before Organic Chemistry 2 exams, which, like, Orgo is scary. And the hearing them learn the design process, and using games and post and like evaluating their own game success and iterating upon their own games as not game designers has also been really cool. They're very excited. They're recognizing and able to post-mortem and reflect on it. But willing to, that this is very much a part of their process that they've taken on and been willing to share, which has been great. I also know kind of anecdotally that there are people are sharing their failures. It's also been really great to see demonstrated outside of my own experience, you know, a dev and client relationships, dev and SMC or SME relationships, that being talked about. I've also had a lot of instances of clarity where somebody has articulated something that I've felt or had a sense of, or I've believed personally, but couldn't really get the right words as to why. And they gave words, they articulated it. So, for example, I've always felt a little mixed feelings in terms of streaks as a form of gamification. I couldn't really think why. And part of it is because, like, I'm not a naturally competitive person. But there are a bunch of people that in the ethical gamification talk who also had really strong feelings about how streaks could be really problematic. They could also be black design or black hat design, you know, bad stuff that can be predatory if done improperly. And hearing that was really, really kind of cool. But then also in that same talk, having a sense of, like, okay, as part of having ethical gamification, you need transparency. And what are the ways transparency manifests? What things could and should and need to be transparent to the player? It's been interesting because very liberal arts, very vibes-based part of how I experience game design, I've been seeing it reflected in different ways and different people and different fields and different studies. But then also, as always, been exposed to the different worlds. So academia, games academia is not something that I'm very used to hearing about or experiencing firsthand. The different kinds of clientele, the different venues and ways that games are used because they're given to kids versus adults versus used in education versus used in healthcare. Just because of the projects that I've worked on, I've had a limited experience with those. And it's also been so cool to see how far people have come, how far games-based learning, how far gamification and the sense of serious play, not just games, but play, has reached. So yeah. Ellen's back. Ellen, do you want to say anything before I stop recording?
Oh no, I ran out of words. It's been cool. I played with some modular controllers. It was awesome.
That's very cool. Did any that would be good for arthritis in the future? Because I'm going to need to get some for myself someday because my hands hurt because I use them. We know this to be true.
Yes, quite a few.
Cool. Well, I might need a shopping list at some point.
My name is Valentina Miller, pronouns she, her.
I'm from Philadelphia.
Ooh. I am a game designer, production lead at a company that makes games and interactives for museums. I also teach at Drexel University and at the University of Pennsylvania.
Cool. So we just came out of the same talk, which was the last one of day three. Tell me about something cool you learned, probably from that last one, because it was really cool.
We just got out of a session about collaborative world building that completely changed the way that I think about world building. Our speaker talked about how it doesn't need to begin with the mythology. Millions of years ago, the gods cracked an egg and the world came out of it. Mm-hmm. But instead, we have multiple worlds happening all around us that are dependent on the space we're in and the time that it's happening. I think that specificity is really going to stay with me.
Yeah. And I think for me, at least, it was like I've seen and played games that were very specific places and times. And I think to some extent, I wondered why they got that specific and why they especially advertiser leaned forward in stating that. And now I get it. And I get why. And that was really cool to see. So then, all right, tell me about a game that really matters to you or has changed you in some way.
Yeah, so I work in serious games. And one of the inspirations for a game we just made is called Spent. It was actually developed for a North Carolina-based nonprofit in Durham. And it is a game about trying to survive in poverty. You're given $1,000 and play as a single parent. And you need to decide whether you pay your bills or whether you try to have healthy food or have a birthday party for your child. So there are hard choices. And at the end of the game, you are prompted to donate for people who are living the game right now. And I just think that's so powerful, like taking the game model and making some real change, direct community action in the world.
That's really, really cool. Where does this game actually exist? I'm curious.
It exists online. You can look it up. It's free. It is text-based with beautiful iconography and graphics. It's simple and elegant.
Nice.
Definitely like an inspiration for the types of games we've been putting in museums lately.
Nice. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Did you join the Discord channel yet? If not, you should, because that is a chance for you to help me figure out what you all want to hear about and what I should do during conferences. I asked around in the Discord if anybody had any hints on cool things in Rochester or things that you would be interested in hearing or learning about this Adventure to the Serious Play conference. One piece of advice I got about going to Rochester is that I should go to the Strong Museum of Play. And during the first day of the conference, after the conference area, there was a 3-hour window of time that the conference managed to get in conjunction with the Strong for basically just like we had free roam. Only conference goers had 2-3 hours of free roam of the Strong Museum. I was there for 2 hours. I don't think I saw 1/4 of what was there. It was so cool. Just top tier museum. I mean, you all know at this point that I used to work in museum exhibits and I still very much love working in museums, period. It was so cool. I want to go back. I want to go back to Rochester, if only just to go to the Strong and properly explore it. Even if that means being surrounded by children and having to like wade through them to go see the cool stuff. I love it. Thank you so much for that recommendation. In the future, if we go to another conference, whether Serious Play or another thing, you should join the Discord so you can hear about it. And also, so that way you can have a chance to tell us what is interesting in that particular city that it's going to be in, or what you want to hear. I did a little bit of this, a little bit of that for this special episode. Tell me what you like, tell me what you don't. You can do so in the Discord channel, or you can talk about what you hear in the episode in the Discord channel. Where is this Discord channel? It is nicegames.club/discord.
Do you feel overwhelmed by the flood of new games every month, especially when indie game gyms get buried under all the AAA hype?
That's where Indie Game Arcade comes in.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Joseph.
And twice a week, we bring you fresh reviews and updates on the best indie games.
Whether it's precision platformers,
roguelike deck builders,
spooky retro horror,
or any kind of wild experiment indie devs dream up.
Catch Indie Game Arcade every Wednesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood. Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC. Member SIPC, a registered broker dealer.
Coming to you live from Gate E18 of the International Airport in Atlanta, Georgia. It's Lydia and Ellen again.
We're so tired.
Yeah. getting home has been a misadventure.
Yeah.
But it's better with friends who can hold your coffee and keep eyes on your bag when you need to go to the bathroom.
Yes. Get you breakfast shake or get you coffee from Caribou while you're getting breakfast shake or while you're attempting to get breakfast yogurt, but they're out of yogurt and they hadn't fired up the crepe griddle yet. So all they have is shakes.
But also somehow managed to intuit exactly the type of shake, the breakfast smoothie that is the most appealing.
Yeah.
For the other person.
Sweet.
But
life's small victories.
Yeah.
Right? In the midst of so many defeats.
Protein breakfast shakes and dude wipes.
Yeah, dude wipes, you guys. If you're stuck at an airport and 4 hours of sleep because of various delays.
Yeah.
Dude wipes.
This is not, however, a product placement for dude wipes, but dude wipes if you want to.
You're not sponsored unless dude wipes are out. We could reach out to them.
Oh, that'd be great. But we had a great time. I had a great time. I shouldn't speak for you.
It was a good, yeah, it was a really good time. I didn't get nearly as much conference time as you did.
Yeah.
Fine.
We got a lot of games and talking time because we were in the same Airbnb. We were with Nikita. We did get to compare some notes with her because she did predominantly the workshops when she also was able to because she had to do some stuff.
Yeah. She's in a pretty intense executive leadership thingy. Right now.
Yeah.
So she had a lot of classwork and I had a lot of work. And, but the campus was only like a mile away from our Airbnb.
It was like a 20-minute walk.
Yeah.
So I did that multiple times.
Nice campus too.
Yes. Very nice campus. So Ellen, talk about a little bit your experience. I talked a little bit about it yesterday or the day before yesterday. But I'm curious kind of what you did end up getting to see and kind of how your experience was, especially since this is not the first time you've gone here.
Yeah. So the last time I went to Sirius Play, I put it on my calendar every year and I always want to go. But I've only made it a couple times. And the last time I went was 2023. I mean, I did an episode or two on it on the podcast, and then also got some folks I had met at the conference as guests in the subsequent months. So the last time I went, it was in Toronto at University, Metropolitan University of Toronto, and also a beautiful campus. Obviously, there's like a pretty significant game development presence in Toronto.
Yeah.
But there's also like some pretty solid like game development and potentially serious games work done at the university as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like an academic presence. And I went to more sessions that year. I think comparing the two experiences, conferences only, this one seemed like it had more robust like logistics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they had a really nice conference app. They're kind of experimenting with that. I believe conference leadership has changed. The person who started the conference and ran it for many, many years is, I think, passed the torch onto someone else.
Yeah.
And so there were a few different things that were like a different style that I thought were really good improvements. The website was way better than it has been in the past. They had the conference app, which helped you organize your sessions.
My only complaint about the app was that it took a little longer than I would have wanted to update the chat function in the networking section. That is truly the only thing that I would have improved.
Yeah. But in past years, I don't even think they had that.
And like, I usually I'm kind of loath to download another app, but like, this was genuinely helpful. I liked it a lot. And it was also, it meant that I was able to like schedule things pretty easily and like bookmark them for later. I really liked being able to look up people or be able to quickly like message people and make a 15-minute slots, which then get added into your schedule to network with people. Mm-hmm. I really liked that it gave us a place, like a middle ground in terms of networking with people where it's like, okay, I found you on the app. And then if we need to connect later, we have that as a way to send a message to be like, and here's my email mm-hmm. or here's the thing that we talked about mm-hmm. or whatever. That's really nice because that takes one less cog out of trying to figure things out in the midst of trying to go to all the things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing too is that it was, I think Bretlo was the name of the app.
Mm-hmm.
It had a perfectly good web app too.
So like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm installing anything. It was just on my browser.
There's Boarding Zone 1 right now.
Oh, for us? They are Boarding Zone 1 for us.
Yeah, so you have 4 zones to give your thoughts, and then we'll be good.
Oh, my gosh. I feel like you should replace the Nice Games Club theme with the Benny Hill theme. For this entire, like, for this entire section is just, like...
Or, yeah, can you still have a...
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk more quickly.
But, yeah, so... So that was good. Continuing to compare it to the last time I was there at the conference, which was in Toronto, harder to get around this university.
Yeah, there truly weren't that many buildings, but they were hard to figure out where you were.
Yeah.
Orientation either within or around.
Yeah. The Toronto building, which is, you know, beautiful. St. John Fisher is also beautiful, but Toronto is just more of my architectural preference. But it also had a lot more open spaces. So all the rooms were like, really close to one another
mm-hmm.
in that you didn't necessarily have to walk a longer distance, but you didn't have to go through as many stairs. You didn't have to navigate as many turns. It was just like within the first couple sessions, you knew how to get around the conference. And it was all really oriented, like kind of centered around one big room mm-hmm. where they had multiple events. And I think that was a pretty significant benefit that Toronto had that St. John Fisher wasn't able to provide as a location. But what I'm seeing in the Serious Play conference is going forward, they're going to change the locations.
Yes.
I think
2006.
Let's go back in time. 2006. You're playing the Wii.
In 2026, it is going to be at Duke University in North Carolina, United States. So get your calendars, and if you get lost, start looking up Duke University campus maps. I did like how they carved out space for networking, for registration.
That was nice.
There were for the arcade, which was different than exhibitions. Mm-hmm. Arcade was specifically for people who made things and wanted to show off their games specifically, which was kind of cool. I only got to talk to 2 people, but I loved both of the things that I saw and got to engage with and the people I got to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the subdivisions of purpose. Hopefully it's just the arranging them on campus in a way that makes sense and also fits like the AV needs that they have.
Right.
Because that always is a limiting factor for how you can distribute activities over classrooms, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think it's more important to have, especially like at this stage in the conference's like lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's only been going for what, 10 years or so? At this stage, it's more important to have it travel from location to location than to be really, really selective about the specifics of the campus.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you get a chance to talk to any people there? Because that was like, I had mentioned earlier that overhearing people talk about how just friendly and open and like ready to talk to strangers or accost strangers and then see where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is 100% true in my experience. Do you have a chance to talk to anybody this year?
I didn't really have a chance to make any like really significant connections in person. I'm going to look on the app afterwards and see if I can connect with anybody. It's a much more academic conference than I think. I didn't come here as a representative of the company that I work for. I came here as a representative of myself trying to learn.
Yeah.
Because the company I'm working for right now is not super focused on game-based learning. Maybe in the future, but not right now.
Yeah.
But I still love it, obviously, and want to keep doing it, and maybe definitely want to do it a lot more at some point in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But for this one, I just wanted to get out of here, go to this conference, get what I could out of it, play some games, hang out with you and Nikita.
Yeah.
And Nikita's dog and Nikita's husband.
Yeah. To Nikita's dog and husband. Yes. They were lovely. I'm very happy I got to meet them.
Yeah. Pretty awesome group of folks. But yeah, I mean, I did get to a few sessions, which were pretty good. You and I went to one session on Thursday.
Yeah. The D&D one.
The D&D.
That was fun. We talked about that.
Very cool stuff. Like lots of good stuff with that. And then Nikita and I went to a session on Friday. It was like a workshop style session that was amazing. And it was an accessibility section or session where the clinicians, the people who were presenting, weren't just researchers in game-based learning, but they were all clinicians as well. So different types of therapy. And they kind of came at it from different ways. And there was like occupational therapists, and there was, you know, a therapist who also like does a lot of the design and 3D printing and the mods and stuff. So what they did was like, here are the technologies available for people to use if they have like, you know, physical limitations that prevent them from playing. And whether that's they want to get into playing for the first time and they're not able to find interfaces that work because of various reasons, like having to do with their body.
Mm-hmm.
Or they are a person who had a significant injury and have lost their function.
Yeah.
So the functions that they previously relied on as a gamer,
mm-hmm,
are no longer available to them, yeah, or are affected enough that it's really frustrating to try to use those same functions, yeah, to get back into it.
And I would encourage all of y'all game devs or gamers to look at accessibility, because like to borrow something, a phrase that I heard in college during an anthropology of health and illness class, and then also the accessibility talk that I went to at the beginning of the conference. You know, there's this idea that ability is not ability, it is temporary ability.
Yeah.
And that it is borrowed. And because age is disabling, injuries are disabling, and one can also then develop a disability. And so, especially when it comes to like doing something for as long as you want because you love it, it's worth looking into these sorts of things, because they are useful either to be able to keep doing something when you don't have as much function, or to prolong the function you do have,
right,
so you can keep doing it, right, a lot longer. And also as a game dev, so that way more people will get to play your games.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, supporting the efforts to broaden a community of gamers only ever helps. It just helps everybody, and it helps the future you, because you don't know what's going to happen to you. One thing you do know is if you keep going, you're going to get older and your abilities are not going to be the same as what they are now.
I love that yours was hands-on. Like, you got to work. Yeah. Like, that's the thing I really loved. Yeah. And we got to do that at the one I went to too, but not nearly as long, is having that kind of like almost like a touch and feel petting zoo style, mm-hmm, thing for adaptive technology is so cool, because it's one thing to just hear about it, another thing to actually get to play with it. Mm-hmm. And that's like when it connects.
Yeah. But I'm trying. Okay. Yeah. So they had a few different controllers that they brought in that were hooked up. Some of them were hooked up, some of them were not. And they brought in the Xbox. I can't remember the names. Maybe I could remember the names on a day where I'm not running out of 4 hours of sleep.
You can remember the names the day that you came back and we talked about it over dinner. So
yeah.
It's okay.
Okay. Yeah. But anyway, I'm sure, you know, Lydia will be great and go find the links for you and then put them in the show notes. Yeah. So there was an Xbox platform, which is amazing. It's basically just this big white pad with a ton of different ports in it. And the idea is that the Xbox pad, like the big converter thing, I keep thinking of it like a soundboard, you know, like a whatever, I don't know. So that is the thing that converts all the data from the individual inputs into game language.
And it's like fully modular and convertible for it. So you can basically make it work for you and your needs, right?
So like you can imagine you have your setup, you have a whole desk, you have figured out the type of device that you want to be able to use. Let's say that you don't have all the fingers on one of your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And that really obviously affects what you can do with the regular controller. So you're not using a regular controller. You're using something that's been customized to you. Maybe that's a different kind of joystick. Maybe that's a different layout of buttons. A lot of these things are 3D printed for individuals.
Yeah.
And then, further modified. So what the Xbox platform does is you can take in all these inputs, plug them into that platform, and then the platform will translate those inputs into game language.
Mm-hmm.
So that, if you have like something that that can give out data that can be then reinterpreted as directional data,
mm-hmm.
even if it isn't like your typical joystick, then it can still interpret that. So you can get really, really creative with the inputs, and the Xbox system will understand it. So that's pretty cool.
That's cool.
They also brought a PlayStation one, which is like got magnetic buttons on them. It's like a big circle and you've got magnetic buttons and you can like swap things around. They brought something called a quad box, which is actually like you control it with your mouth using huffs.
Yes, and, yes.
And intakes of air.
Mouth and tongue control as well. Yeah.
I don't know if it has much tongue control.
I don't know. That's what Nikita said, but maybe.
Oh, there's a lip button and then there are four tubes that you control it.
I guess I'm assuming the tongue is helping to direct the airflow.
But it is the airflow. It's the exhale and intake of air. And it is like, I think pressure might have something to do with it. And the duration. Anyway, it's a lot. It gives you a lot of really fine tuned control.
Cool.
And the presenters even mentioned a series on HBO Max. It's just HBO now. We got rid of Max because that was a whole
file. Yeah.
We're back to HBO, which it was all along because no one ever just called it Max. I'll say we're legally obligated to. Anyway, that's my hot take. There's apparently like a documentary on that system on that flat on Mac on HBO called Quad Gods, which is all about that.
Any last words before we board? Because we got a board.
The last controller they had was called the Proton, and it's like. Like Legos for making your controller.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Would you go to this conference again?
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
My name is Kyle Mulvey, and I use he/him pronouns.
Where are you coming from?
Coming from Nashville, Tennessee. I'm a technical designer.
Cool. So it's the end of day three. What have you learned at this? What is something that you have learned at this conference? Because there's a lot.
I learned a lot. Yeah, like you said, a lot. But yesterday during the keynote talk from Steven, he pointed out that cities are being designed against play. Mm-hmm. So there's these signs up in places that's like no skateboarding, no throwing a ball, or like you have to be quiet, or like there's a curfew, and that really discourages play. Which is really discouraging.
Yeah.
That we're even designing things like that are against play instead of for play.
Wow, that's sad and so true.
Yeah.
What is a game that has made a difference in your life and why?
Probably Spyro the Dragon. When I was like high 4 or 5, that was the first video game I had beat. I had played some other games before that, but Spyro is the one I actually beat.
Mm-hmm.
And then the credits started to roll with everyone's names on it. And that was the moment where I realized that people make video games. And then someone in the credits' name was Kyle. And I was like, my little 4-year-old brain put 2 and 2 together. It was like, oh my God, wait, I can make a video game?
Oh, that's so cool. So
that was like the game that inspired me to become a game developer.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
That's our show. For show notes and links on today's topics, go to our website, nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes, delivered to you 1 week early. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. Discuss this episode, or others, or whatever, with your fellow listeners on Discord. Stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. Next week, we'll be back in the clubhouse, but that's it for this week. So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.